Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, January 20th, 2019. This is episode 1559. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by On Deck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, On Deck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, On Deck is a lender you can trust. Find out more at ondeck.com/techguy. And by Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business with customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, it's that time. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smartwatches. We got your MP3. No, we don't have any MP3 players. No, sorry. All out of stock. No GPS either. Yeah, the phone took over for all that, didn't it? Anything with a chip in it, though, I will talk about it. We actually often talk about, in fact, I had to coin a term last show for people who keep old gear going. Last night I was at a crab feed for the local Lions Club, and with our 16-year-old, and I said, "Look, Michael, you see that? That's called a flip phone. We used to use those." He said, "What's that?" I said, "That's a flip phone. Why would you want one of those?" I don't know, but I guess they think they're coming back. Flip phones are. 8888 Ask Leo. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I can answer any questions about flip phones, unless it's maybe how to move it to a smartphone. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. That's free, you know. There's no charges, no sign up even. You just go there and you can see everything we talk about. We put links up there. James Rufo does and Josh Windisch, and that way they keep the keep you from writing anything hazardously while you're driving or anything like that. And if you're having a conniption, conniption is probably a word that goes with a flip phone. If you're having a conniption because I said something you disagree with, well, by all means, hie thee to the web. You could always call, but if you can't call, and you go to the website, techguylabs.com. That's open all week, and you can leave a comment there. Say, "No, Leo's wrong. Here's what you need to do." That's fine. That's good. I approve. We want to get it right. 888-827-5536. Speaking of getting it right, yesterday I talked about collection number one. A huge collection of logins and passwords, 773 million of them, in the clear. Discovered earlier this week by a guy named Troy Hunt, who runs a wonderful site that everybody should have a bookmark to, called Have I Been Pwned? That's owned with a P. That's how the elite hacksaws say it. Have I Been Pwned? And I kind of misstated it. Brian Krebs, who is a fantastic security guy, his blog is Krebs on Security. He did something like called reporting. Wow, this is cool. He actually he figured out who had put collection number one online, and apparently there was a Telegram handle. So yeah, that's a messaging system. Telegram username where he could be reached. And Sanixer is his name. See, he's elite hacksaw, so he's got to have some clever handle. Sanixer. So Brian said, "Well, let's reach out and see what he can find out more about the origins of collection number one." Sanixer's selling it for $45. Let me do the math. 773 million names and passwords, $45. That's like 0.00002 cents a password. That's how much your password's worth. Partly because, it turns out, that's old. Sanixer said, he says, Brian writes, he steered me away from that archive, suggesting that, unlike most of his other wares, that's what the elite hacksaws call their, you know, bad stuff wares, collection number one was at least 2 or 3 years old. His other password packages, which total more than 4 terabytes in size, are less than a year old. Oh, you'll want these. These are much fresher. He asked, where did you get these? He says, Xanaxer says it was a mix of, quote, dumps and leaked bases. So, my advice, though, from yesterday, where I was wrong was that wasn't a brand new fresh collection. It was old. I don't even think I said it was fresh. But where I was right is that we all need to go to haveibeenpwned.com. And you can enter an email address in there and see if it's been owned. You know what? Guess what? It has. And if you've been using it for any length of time, everybody knows the email address. But that's not that valuable. The scary part is click the tab at the top of the page that says passwords and enter in the important passwords in your life. It's safe to do that, by the way. Your email password would be a good start. In fact, that'd be the number one place to start, your email password. Because after all, if somebody can get your email account, then they go to the other account and say, oh, I forgot my password, and they'll get the reset email and they can get it back, right? So you really want to make sure your email account's secure. Go in there, just type in your email password. Make sure that that has not been pwned, because that would be bad. And you know where it's really bad and where it's really a problem is people who reuse passwords, and we all do it, I know. If you reuse your passwords then, and that password has been pwned, I like saying pwned. It's like having a pony, but not. If it's been pwned, that means the bad guys have it or can get it for 0.00000002 cents per password and try to log into your stuff. And worse, if it's your email, maybe get into everything else. It'd be a good idea to change that password everywhere you used it. Now, the other thing that's really important, and this is where I really let you down yesterday. I didn't mention two-factor. That's going to, even if your password is out there, pwned as it were, if you turn on two-factor authentication on your most, and by the way, if your email company doesn't support it, get a better email company. Google's does it. Yahoo does it. Outlook will do it. You got to turn it on. It's not on by default, but turn it on, because what that means is the bad guys not only have to have your password, but they have to have a code that's only good for 30 seconds. So even if it leaked into one of these databases, it wouldn't be any use to anybody. It's like a second password, and it's really a great idea to have that. So on your most important accounts, your Amazon account, your bank accounts, and most importantly of all, your email account, make sure you have two-factor turned on. And then you can sleep at night. You probably could sleep at night before, but knowing this now, maybe it's a little harder. These things get out there. That's the problem. And it's not your fault. These aren't people putting malware on your system to find out what your password is and onesie-twosie doing it. No. Much more effective to break into Yahoo or Equifax or Target and get your passwords there. That's much, you get many more in one fell swoop. So it's really the companies who aren't protecting your passwords very well that are to blame here, and it is up to us to protect ourselves. Okay? All right. Okay. All right. We're going to take a little tiny teeny-weeny time out here and get back to your calls next. It's time for Kim Schaffer, the phone angel. I don't know if I can hear you, Kim. Say something.
Do I have no microphone?
No, I hear you. It's, I have buttons, right? And your button says used elsewhere.
Okay. I don't know. Where is it being used?
I don't know what that means. But if we hear anybody on the line, we'll get rid of them. So Kim has been here. It's early in the wee hours of the morning.
Yep.
Answering the phones so we can have calls on this show. Mm-hmm. What would we do without you?
Hi, Kim. Yeah, probably
Hi,
automate
Kim.
It.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Hi, Kim. Yeah, if they could figure out a way to automate all of this, they would. You know that.
You probably can with that new Google, you demonstrated
Duplex.
It one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing where it like,
hello,
it predicts what you say.
I am the phone angel. what would you like to say to Leo?
Not the most articulate. No,
they could probably do it. Well, they put the ums in to make it sound more human, but also that's while it's thinking. They put ums in.
Pause is okay. Ums just not good. You ever take a speech class in college where they ding a bell at you when you say
no,
or like?
Really?
Yeah.
You should learn not to say that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's a stalling technique.
Yeah, I have the floor. Don't start talking. I'm still talking here. The Google Duplex is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't think it could replace you.
I hope not. They've already replaced me at a lot of places, so I'm hoping that this is not one of them.
I know, I know. This is, welcome to the modern world. I think every person that can be replaced by a machine ultimately will be. I know, isn't that terrible?
When's the last time you actually paid a toll to a toll taker?
Yeah, good point. Good point. And people say, you can't replace a show host, but you could, because I've been doing this so long. There are literally tens of thousands of hours of me doing this. Google could easily make a bot that sounded exactly like me, had all of my rhythms and cadences, and even knew the answers probably better than I do.
But do you think it could have the off-the-cuff personality?
That's why I stay goofy.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you build in goofy? I don't know.
Maybe. You could probably code that, yes.
You could code in some goofy. Line 53, be goofy.
Yeah.
Go to 53. So, who should I talk to first?
How about Ashley in North Carolina, selling something on Craigslist? And you know how that's more kind of a personal thing? You meet him in a parking lot and get your payment. Well, he's wondering if PayPal is safe for that kind of sale.
Well.
He's on line 4.
And line 4. That's a good question. Hey, Ashley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim.
Hey, Leo. So nice to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you. Wonderful.
I am wondering, my social engineering bells and whistles are kind of going off because I am attempting to sell a MacBook Air on Craigslist. And, you know, the charm of Craigslist is selling it locally. You know, someone gives you the cash, you give them the item, and you're done. You don't have to worry about shipping and, you know, complications with payments and all that stuff. Well, the person that's the most interested in my MacBook Air is wanting me to ship the item to Miami, Florida, is willing to pay me $150 more, and wants to pay me through PayPal. So my question is, what are your thoughts there?
Anytime you buy on eBay, you go through this process, right? Because eBay is very rarely face-to-face. It's almost always, I give you money, you give me something. And in order for that to work, and eBay, by the way, PayPal's owned by eBay. In order for that to work, they have to have some guarantees. PayPal does have guarantees, but I have to say, I've also seen plenty of horror stories where they're not enough. Shipping, for instance, can be challenging. It's difficult because there's a certain amount of trust. There's just no way around that. If you're doing it on PayPal, you should look at the guarantees that PayPal offers. But it makes me. It always makes me worry a little bit. Now I do it all the time. I spend money on PayPal because often, especially for unique items, it's hard to get them anywhere else. So I think, you know what you want to look at? There are a couple of things. That's why people use eBay, because eBay has seller and buyer ratings. That's always a good indicator. You're not doing it on eBay, though. You're doing it on Craigslist, huh?
Right. Correct. Yes, sir.
I'd look. PayPal's fine. PayPal does have guarantees. You know, they say it is safer. It's probably safer than, anything else that's out there. Here's the scam. And it happens a lot. They saw it on Craigslist. They're in Florida. They say, okay, send it to me. And then they say, I never got it. Or that's one big scam. I never got it. And then it's hard to prove that they got it. So that's one big scam. Another scam goes the other direction, where they ship it to slightly the wrong address and it never got delivered and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, they've got your money. You're in a different position as a seller. Remember, the buyer also has the same qualms about you, right, Ashley? The buyer's trusting you. I hope they send an actual MacBook. And I remember a lady who bought when a new iPhone was out, probably the iPhone 10, was all excited, bought one on eBay. She got the box, not the phone. It's tricksy. I would say most of the time, I've only had one problem. It was many years ago. PayPal does guarantee it. You should read carefully what PayPal guarantees. It's probably why the buyer wants to use PayPal, because he is just as worried about you as you might be about him.
Very true.
So if you're going to do it with PayPal. Check and, you know, carefully. I would send it in such a way that you can guarantee delivery, you know, FedEx, and say, I want a signature. That will make it much easier to prove it. In fact, I'm sure PayPal on PayPal has suggestions for how to make sure this transaction goes well. But I trust it. I think it's I do it all the time. I do it all the time. It is a little nerve wracking, isn't it?
It is. It's just, you know, this day and age with so many scams, and you know, and especially whenever somebody's offering you $150 more than what you're asking, and, you know, it's like, wait a second.
Yeah.
By the way, eBay
no longer owns PayPal. They spun them off in 2015 into a separate company. So. I take that back. It's not an eBay company anymore. Do it. But like I said, make signature required. Make sure you have the right address, that you have proof it was delivered. And then if you don't get payment, then you can go to PayPal and, say, hey. And I think if you pay extra, there's insurance on PayPal, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good backstop.
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah.
Alrighty, sir. Well, thank you so much.
And my pleasure.
Great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again, Ashley. Yeah.
Right. Take care.
Keep listening. You should be in Asheville, Ashley, but he's in Charlotte. Oh, well. Yeah, there are other solutions like Venmo, which is run by PayPal, but I think PayPal really is the way to do this. Could he be scammed? What would the scams be? How could a buyer scam a seller using PayPal? Mostly, I would say, claim you didn't get it. Say, well, I'm not going to pay you. I didn't get it. So that's why you want to prove that he got it. Hey, you know who's coming up? I'll tell you who's coming up. Our fabulous car guy, our brand new car guy, Sam Abulsamid, will come up in just a moment, talk about the technology of automobiles, and we'll take more of your calls, too, at 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think it's really more of a risk. I don't know. I would guess it's more of a risk for the buyer, isn't it? That, you know, because you can say, well, here, look, I showed it. It came. I guess the seller, the buyer could say to him, I got an empty box. That proves I got a delivery, but it wasn't what I expected. Take pictures. I'm sure PayPal somewhere has a page on how to protect yourself as a seller and a buyer. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Thank you, Twisted Mister. Do a street view of the ship-to address to make sure it's not a P.O. box or mailboxes, et cetera, that kind of thing. It'd be not, if you really had a house, that'd be good. Goods not as described. Yeah, so there's risk there. PayPal and eBay protect buyers more than sellers. That's interesting. I should be an escrow fiduciary. There you go. Send the shipment only to a registered address in the PayPal account. Yeah, does PayPal have ratings for users? I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Chorp says, anyone who contacts you on Craigslist wanting you to ship instead and offering much more than what you asked is a common scam. Never accept offers for more than what you are asking. That's a very interesting point. Yeah, why would he offer you more than you're asking? Sam, you have headphones coming out of your head?
I do.
No, you have scooters coming out of your head.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have a scooter. I sent you an email the other day. I don't know if you probably didn't see it with a link to a little video with the scooter.
I did. I meant to send you back a note that said, look, it has a cushion for each cheek.
Yep. It folds all up. A friend of mine who happens to be the CEO of Auto Harvest here in Detroit, it's a transportation technology incubator, he's going to start importing these things. They're about $1,500 each.
Wow.
And they're pretty cool. I took a ride on it.
I also, there was a question that popped up in the chat last week while we were talking. Someone asked using autonomous vehicles and snow. And I'd like to touch on that. And there's an article on The Verge today that my friend Andy Hawkins just wrote. He had a chance to chat with somebody who's a Waymo One user. And, and Chandler, who apparently he recently hailed a ride. I'll drop this in the chat here.
Do you want me to put anything specific on your lower third as far as a link?
Twitter? You can put navigantresearch.com. Okay. Anyway, when this Waymo One user hailed a ride, it was raining, and when the car got there, the human driver was driving the vehicle. Instead, it was not operating in autonomous mode. So I just want to touch on AVs and weather.
He's driving our car of the future. That's Sam Abulsamid. He is a research guy at Navigant Research. He's also our car guy, and he's sitting in front of a scooter today. Hello, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How are you this week?
I guess a scooter counts. We're talking, it doesn't have to be cars. It could be transportation.
It's micro-mobility is what we call it.
They're all over a lot of cities now. In fact, it's become a blight in some cities.
Yeah, well, I happened to be in San Jose last March for the NVIDIA GPU Technology Conference on the day that Bird and Lime first dropped their scooters. I walked out of the hotel at the end of the day to go out to dinner, and all of a sudden there's these scooters all over
everywhere.
The sidewalk.
Yeah,
yeah, and it was like no announcement of it. They just magically appeared. Or, you know, whatever the opposite of magic would be, you know, in a negative term.
I think dropped their scooters is a very good way to put it, because that's kind of what it looks like. They're just helter-skelter all over the place. On the other hand, I've seen research that says these scooters are really good. People are using them for short, distances that a car would be impractical for, especially in a city.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Dara Khosrowshahi, the CEO of Uber, was speaking recently in an interview, and he said that, you know, for somebody that needs to go like 10 blocks or something like that in a city, it makes so much more sense to just grab a scooter or a bike and do that than to, you know, wait for a car and have the car take you that same distance. And yet, you know, it's really all about right sizing the mode of transportation for every trip.
Well, an electric is great too, because there's no emissions.
Yeah,
it saves.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, it saves your rooms.
But, you know, the problem with those shared scooters is that, you know, you don't always know what kind of condition they're going to be in, you know, how much juice they're going to have left in them. You know, is it going to have enough power to get you where you want to go? Or is there even going to be one there when you need it? And so this week at the Detroit Auto Show, one of the things they started at the Detroit Auto Show a couple of years ago was this sort of adjacent conference they call Automobility, with a D on the end, as in Detroit. And my friend Jason Pankin, who's the CEO of Auto Harvest, which is a automotive technology incubator, transportation technology incubator in Detroit, brought a couple of these scooters along that you see over my shoulder. It's the eHalo scooter, which is one that you can buy. And there's a bunch of them that you can buy. This is one that he's going to start importing.
This is nice because it has a seat, so it's almost like a little bike without pedals. These are street legal?
It's really easy to ride. It depends on where you are. It varies. You know, some places you're allowed to ride them, like in bike lanes, some places sidewalks, some places on the street. I would definitely recommend that you absolutely wear a helmet. This has been one of the big issues with the shared scooters as well, is that most people don't carry a helmet around with them. And if they decide to just take a ride, you know, they might not have a helmet. And if they trip or, you know, if they have a little accident, you know, it could turn into something major.
I think most of the objections, though, to the shared scooters are the mess they make, because people ride them somewhere and just drop them, you know.
Exactly.
A driveway, doesn't matter. In front of a store, in the door, doesn't matter. And then, of course, you know, the issue of traffic. If you get a lot of scooters, car drivers. This has been a problem in San Francisco with bikes. You know, there's a constant battle between bicycles and cars in San Francisco. Now there's got scooters. It's like, oh. On the other hand, I think it's a great way to get around. Our son takes the light rail to school, but there's a mile and a half between the school and the light rail station. So he packs a folding scooter. And, you know, unfortunately, though, these scooters are not well made. He has had a couple of Eco Ricos that have eventually broken on him over time.
Well, this one looks pretty durable. You know, I rode on it. You know, it didn't fall apart when, you know, when I sat my butt on it. You know, I rode it around inside the inside of Cobo Hall where the Detroit Auto Show is.
Isn't that fun?
And, yeah, it worked great.
Out of the way!
Folds up in about 10 seconds. The seat folds down. The handlebars fold down. You pop it back up again.
It's very practical. And, How heavy is it?
It's about 30 pounds.
Oh, that's nice.
But when and when you fold it down, the handlebars actually make a handle that you can just grab. So you don't have to carry the whole thing that you just cart it along like a roller bag in the airport.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and these are going to be about $1,500.
Not choking because I know how much scooters cost, but I think a lot of people are going to say, what? 15?
Well, you know, when you think about what, you know, if you live in a city, if you think about what it costs to own and operate a car, you know, in Manhattan, for example, it can cost you $1,000 a month just for a parking space if you own a car. So, you know, if you drop $1,500 on one of these, you can take it with you anywhere. You can take it right into your office, park it under your desk. You don't have to pay for parking or anything. So it's great. Never parking tickets.
When will these 1 mile Halo City electric scooters be out?
They should be out sometime this spring. Okay. And then Jason's actually got a few right now. You know, he's got a couple more coming in next week, I think, if you happen to want one,
I
Leo.
I can connect you with Jason. For myself. I do not belong on a scooter.
But for Michael?
Maybe for Michael. What's the weight limit? This is the other issue. Because Michael...
I think it's 230 pounds.
Yeah, see, that won't work. Because Michael weighs, I think, 220, and then he has a 50-pound backpack for school. Oh, I don't know how heavy it is.
It may be a little higher than that. I'll connect you.
Yeah, we need one that can handle a lot of weight. That's what's happened with the other scooters is the wheels are falling off and things are breaking because it's just a lot of weight. Scooters are really meant for lighter people. So you wanted to also talk about winter and self-driving cars.
Yeah, you know, we got about 5-6 inches of snow here in Detroit yesterday and last night. And last week in the chat while we were talking, somebody put a comment in, or asked a question in there about how autonomous vehicles or automated vehicles do in the snow. And basically they don't, why, for the most part, which is why you see, most of the testing of these things taking place in places like California and Arizona, Nevada and Miami, doesn't snow.
It was my sense they work better in the rain than humans do, that the LIDAR that they use can get through raindrops, but snow, I guess
it depends. Sometimes it depends on the kind of LIDAR. I mean, there's a number of different kinds of LIDAR sensors. They're not all the same. Some work better in the rain than others.
There are cars that just use cameras. Those would not be very good in rain or snow, I would imagine.
That's right. You know, I mean, a camera is, you know, in fact, usually worse, you know, overall than human vision. It's got less dynamic range. But, you know, there are solutions to this. You know, one of the issues for an automated vehicle is just knowing where the road is. If the road is covered with snow, you can't see the lane markings, and so it makes it harder for it to guide itself.
It
has to have a high definition map around of all the landmarks, so it can localize itself off of that, because GPS is not precise enough. You only have with normal GPS, you've got about 10 feet or so, you know, 8 to 10 feet of precision of accuracy, whereas with you can get some high definition GPS. It's much more expensive. That can get you down to a few inches.
I had never thought of this. So with these self-driving cars and trucks, there may be a constraint on them in snowy weather.
Maybe. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things they do though is with the high definition maps, you can triangulate. If you have a map that has buildings and trees and other fixed points, fixed landmarks that you can try, you know, the position of, you can triangulate from those and get down to 1 centimeter accuracy. So, but a little more than 1/2 inch accuracy. And Ford did some testing a couple of years ago here in Michigan during the winter with their prototype vehicles and was able to drive around in that. And that's one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But the other piece is just getting the sensors to see through the weather.
Right.
Last year at Google I/O, Waymo showed off a video showing how their system was using AI to be able to essentially erase snowflakes that were falling from the view, yeah, from the LiDAR.
I can only do that on my driveway. Sam, yeah. Abul-Samid, he's the car guy at Navigant Research. He's our car guy, and it's always great to talk to you, Sam. We'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Yeah, that's the problem with these scooters is actually Michael's more like 240, I think, plus his backpack. We'd need to have one that could handle up to 300 pounds, and that's
most of these rare. Are not they're designed for, you know, very smaller, skinnier people.
Yeah, that's who you see on scooters, smaller, skinnier people. I like that this has a seat though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, and it's surprisingly comfortable to ride on. You know, you just flip that seat over, fold that whole stock down, fold the handle down.
Well, that's what we need. Yeah, he gets on the. They'll take bikes on the smart rail, but he likes to just get on with the scooter, have it folded up. He can get right off. It was really a good solution for the first couple of years, anyway. We've gone through, I think, three scooters now, so we got to find a better solution.
Well, I know one of the things Jason wants to do, he's going to set up production here in Michigan, in Detroit, and he's got some things that he wants to upgrade on this thing to make it a little more robust. So he may be coming up with a stronger version of it as well.
It's pretty cool looking. I like the the seat. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was fun to ride around along the show floor. So.
Well, that's why I love my electric bike. I just love this kind of freedom that you feel to be just scooting around is really, really cool. Yeah. Well, thank you, Sam. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Talk to you next week.
All right. See ya. Bye bye. Our show today brought to you by On Deck. If you're a small business you are in a cash crunch, which happens to us all the time. You know, you got to make payroll. Maybe you got a big order. You got a lot of stuff to manufacture, but you're not going to get paid for 30 days or 60 or 90 days. Don't put it on your credit card. You know what interest rates are on credit cards. That's crazy. Go to On Deck. On Deck is totally devoted to small business owners with fast, easy financing tailored to your exact situation at a much better interest rate than a credit card. It's also fast. You get funding as fast as 24 hours. And, boy, the limits are high with term loans as high as $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000. No business collateral. I like that. And it won't impact your personal credit. Your application process is very easy. They're famous for their loan specialists based in the U.S., so you can apply with them on the phone, or there's an online application as well. If you go to ondeck.com/techguy, ondeck.com/techguy. On Deck delivers some of the best customer service in the U.S. Their loan specialists are in the country. They've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And, man, they've been around. They've loaned over $10 billion now to 80,000 small business owners. Trustpilot, 9.8 out of 10 rating. That's really as good as you can get. 9.8 out of 10. On Deck, the secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. No shame in it. It happens to us all the time. You know, you just got a cash flow. You've got the accounts receivable, but the money's not in the bank. You got to make payroll, or you got to buy widgets or whatever it is. Don't suffer. Don't go to your credit cards. Go to ondeck.com/techguy. In fact, if you do that right now, you can get a free consultation. No pressure, no sales pitch with their U.S.-based specialists. ondeck.com/techguy. Apply online or by phone. Get approved in minutes. ondeck.com/techguy. We thank On Deck for their support and for making it a little bit easier for the small business. As a small businessman myself, I appreciate that. ondeck.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm a low ride on my scooter. There's something silly about a man of my age and dignity riding a little scooter around. I think it's really more for, you know, guys in skinny jeans with toupees, not toupees, goatees, don't ride a scooter with a toupee. That's a bad idea. Johnny, Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Johnny, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
Hey, last weekend you had a caller that was wanting to be able to use some of their legacy phones with some of these voice over IP apps, and particularly, I guess, Google Voice.
Yeah, he was interested in eliminating his landline and just using Google Voice. Yeah.
Right. Right. So it got me thinking. I thought, because I have Google Voice, and you had recommended the Obi Talks.
Yeah.
So I did a little research, and I thought, well, this would be nice, because I have some old, cool-looking, you know, Pottery Barn phones that I had with my landline, which I had discontinued quite a few years ago. And they're just sitting around looking like decorative items on tables these days in the functional. So I thought it would be nice to make these functional.
So the Obi Talk is a little device, just to recap, this is what I recommended to our caller. I used it for a long time, that plugs into your internet, you know, feed, your Ethernet jack, and then has on the other end a RJ, what is it, RJ45? RG11, little jack for the phone. And so you can use that old Pottery Barn. I didn't know Pottery Barn made phones, but you can use that old Pottery Barn phone, plug it in, and it works just like a regular phone, except it's using the internet instead of the telco. That's cool. Yeah, did you try it?
Well, here's the limitations, that if I had done my research a little bit more before I ordered it on Amazon, it was about $50. I got the OBI 200, okay. So I got the bottom line. So it was about $50. I didn't realize this until I got the phone. I have a Project Fi account.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I had trouble getting it to configure, you know, when I went to Obi Talk's website. And I kept getting configure my Google Voice, you know, which is tied to Google Fi.
Right.
It said connection failed, 403 forbidden. So yeah. I did some research on that one, and I looked around, and some said it was a problem with Google's network and everything. Well, I finally realized by looking at some Amazon reviews and looking at some more research out there that you can't use Project Fi.
Very frustrating, yeah. So I used the Obi Hi for a long time, and then I remember they said Google Voice is going to. In fact, I had stopped recommending it because they said Google Voice will stop working with the Obis soon. And then there was a turnaround. Somehow there was a reversal, but it sounds like they did make it stop working if you're a Fi customer,
right? And you know, even though the irony is that, you know, you get this little device, which is a little, you know, it's a little square device, and it says it has big old Google Voice, you know, on the front of it,
right?
Google Voice logo, so. So some people recommended this, and I did try this, and I got it to work, but I need some recommendations from you as far as the limitations now I'm running into. It said set up a second Google Voice account, right?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Okay, all right, so I did, and it worked fine. It's not tied to my Project Fi account.
Okay.
So I did that, and it configured fine. It configured fine. However, you know, now I've got this other Google Voice number now, right? This other Google phone number that nobody knows.
Nobody knows, right?
I'm like you. I've got all these devices, and it's like, okay, I just try to publish one number.
So yeah.
Nobody calls me on that one.
That's what I put on my business card, my Google Voice number, and I figure, well, I'll just forward it to whatever I need it to ring.
Exactly. So the problem is now I've got this second Google Voice number. I thought, well, I wonder if I can forward that to my first Google phone number, right? Well, no, it doesn't allow you to do
that. Oh, man. Why not? It's another number. Google.
My number and add this number. It will not let you add this second Google Voice number to forward to. So it's like, well, what good is this really going to do me? You know, because I do have an iPhone. I have a Project Fi, you know, a Pixel 3.
Yeah.
And I have an iPhone 10.
Yep.
So my iPhone is through AT&T.
Yeah.
So, you know, it will let me enter, you know, of course, that cell phone number, which some people do call me on some. And, you know, that will work. But it's like, okay, what good is this number really going to do me? if you can't forward it. Right. So you have any recommendations on that?
Yeah. So the OB is working with a number no one knows. And you can't use Google Voice or Fi in your case. You can't forward it to another to a Google. So what does it say when you try to forward it to a Google voice number? It just says no?
It says no. You know, you can't forward it to this number. Like, let me see if I have this on my...
That's really frustrating. Google, I mean, I guess it is a free service. Right.
Right.
So Fi's not. You pay for Fi. But voice is a free service, so I guess it's not. Yeah, it does say actually on the Google Voice, rather the Google Fi help page, you can't use Obi-Hi devices.
Right, and so yeah. You know, I should have did a little more research. So hopefully, this is a warning to other listeners.
No, I appreciate it because I did not know that. I did not know that, and a lot of other features of Google Voice, by the way, are not available on Fi, like call recording, call switching, caller ID. Text message to email. Yeah. So this is very annoying.
Well, I thought, you know, when I'm at home, which this would be a kind of a pain in the butt, but if I forwarded my iPhone number.
Yeah, you could do that.
And then it was to this other Google Voice, you know, it could be one thing. It's just I got to make sure I turn call forwarding off if that's what I'm.
Oh, saying. That's an interesting thing. So you have Google Voice. Okay, I get it. What you're saying is I'll have Fi forward to my iPhone, which I do already. But
right.
I can then use star whatever it is, *63 to forward my iPhone to my Obi.
Exactly. Or the other way around. Like have the Obi call the iPhone, right? Or no, what you're
No, saying, yeah, do yeah, that. Have the right. Yeah, yeah, because yeah, yeah. And you could even do that permanently, although no, when you get home, you know, you could actually, you know what you do? You do a shortcut. Have you played with the iOS 12 shortcuts? You could make a shortcut that says, when I get home, forward my cell phone to my Google Voice number.
No, I haven't. I heard you talking about that feature last week.
Yeah.
I haven't really used it yet.
Yeah. So. I'm pretty sure it could do that. It knows your location. I'm pretty sure. Although, shortcuts, let's not get too off topic here, but shortcuts I noticed because I played with it yesterday because I had told a caller I'd try to figure out if there was a way to listen to a playlist for 15 seconds each
right.
song.
Exactly.
And it looks like the shortcuts won't let me do that. I don't know why not, but it doesn't seem to want the obvious way to do it doesn't seem to work. So I'm going to keep playing with it. But there is a limitation. This is what happens when you move into a walled garden. I mean, all computing has limitations, but what you'll see is for economic reasons, often companies limit the things you can do, even though there's no technical reason you couldn't do it. Remember that Fi is actually an MVNO. They're reselling connections from T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular. And so they may, you know, T-Mobile may have said, well, yeah, but whatever you do, don't let it work with Google Voice. I mean, I don't know what the, you know, behind the scenes negotiations were.
Yeah. I want to ask you one more question when it comes to Google Voice and how you're using it with your setup. Because I know you're always getting new phones to evaluate.
Yes, right? That's why I use it.
You're getting other numbers, right.
Right.
So my question is, if I have my iPhone and I'm out, you know, if I'm out and I don't have the,
Hang on a sec, because I have to take a break. But okay. Hang on, I want to talk some more to you because I sense a fellow sufferer, and I'd like to help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, sorry I had to do that, but I'm back.
Okay.
So you were wondering what?
I was wondering. Okay, you don't like to publish all these other numbers that you have, right? You just want. People
I give out a three a 302 number that is a Google Voice number, and then actually it's actually my Google Fi number. It's attached to my Pixel 3 because I did the same thing, which I regret doing, which is I said, "Oh, port my Google Voice number over to Google Fi," and of course, immediately lost access to Google Voice. You know, many Google Voice features. But so I'm using my Google Voice number as my Fi number. And then, yeah, I forward it to up to five other phones. I forward it to a couple of iPhones, another Android, Note 9, bunch of other things.
But if you call somebody on those other devices, is that not showing that number
no.
to the user that you're calling?
No, it doesn't. It shows, it shows the current device number. That's right. Unless, and you can do this, if you use Hangouts or something that's attached to your Fi number, you use that to make the call. But if you use, if I use my iPhone and make an outbound call from my iPhone, it will see the iPhone number, not the Google Voice number.
Right. And so if I publish my Google Voice number, but yet I call someone through my iPhone, they'll say, oh, did you get a new phone number?
Right.
And I said, no, make sure you add this in my contact as well.
See, I don't, it does cause confusion because my wife, for instance, will sometimes call me on my Google Voice number and sometimes call me on my iPhone number. And I keep saying, just use my Google Voice number. Just use, that's all anybody should ever use because I'll pick up wherever I am.
Yeah, and that's what I tell people.
Yeah, and the good news is I very rarely make outbound calls. Where it's more of a confusion is texting. But again, if you use Hangouts.
Which I do.
Then I think you can tell. I think Hangouts is a setting to say which number you want it to appear as. And you could say, I want it to appear as my Google Voice number or my Fi number.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you could do that.
I think so. I moved off Hangouts because Google wants us all to use our, you know, the new Android messages with RCS. And I thought, well, I better try it. But it's not as good as Hangouts. In one critical respect, there's no iPhone version. So I have to use a website.
Can you use it from your desktop?
Yeah. And you can use Safari to create a bookmark. That's what I've done to my messages. And so it's not quite as good as having Hangouts, but I use this. You know how in Safari you can say put an icon on the desktop, and it looks like the messages icon, but it's a web interface.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I like about Hangouts is like if I'm at my desk and I've got my PC open at Hangouts, you know, it's because of the speakers I have in my office. Boy, I really hear somebody, you know, sending me messages, you know, which is kind of cool.
I love that. No, I love that. Absolutely.
And, it, you know, of course, it's easier to type the messages back on a keyboard than it is, you know, through the phone.
Right.
You know, so, right. You know, I do use Hangouts quite a bit.
Yeah, I think Hangouts is the best. I wish Google would support it better instead of, oh, man, Google, don't get me started.
Yeah.
Oh, right, well, Leo, Lisa's going to give me a picture of her for my desk.
I've been wanting to ask you that question for quite a while about your phones because I hear you say, I got another phone.
That's the only, thank God for Google Voice or Fi or whatever. I'd be in trouble.
I was going to say, when you test those, I guess you only can call people that you trust.
Yes, that's right.
because you don't want to give out that phone number.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't call anybody, so that's the good news. And I definitely don't call anybody I don't trust. So if I wanted to use, if I use my Pixel, so that I do, I am, you're right, I am aware of that. So when I use my, when I want to call somebody, I use my Pixel.
Okay.
That solves that, right? Because that appears as my 302 number, my
Yeah, but Google. That's, I don't always have my Pixel phone with me.
Right.
But I don't carry both.
Oh, you've got to carry all your phones.
Well, thank God for Scott, right? Because
that's why I started wearing sport jackets, because they have two breast pockets.
Yeah, because like, I got two phones, and then somebody calls you, you got all these things ringing on you.
And oh, it's crazy. Oh, and yeah, my watch rings, too, so.
Yeah, my watch rings, all these rings.
Yeah.
If you're in my house, I've got a magic jacket as well that gets forwarded. You know,
oh, all right. So you like trying stuff as much as I do, Johnny. You're a geek, too.
Yeah, I'm an IT professional. I've called
you. Oh, I get it. I get it. Yeah, you have to.
So I learned so much just listening to your show because I can relate to you. And you had a call, by the way, last week at the end, and I was looking at the podcast and I mistakenly stopped it. But then I thought, well, I bet you I missed something because sometimes after your credits, you keep on talking.
Like now. Like now, right?
Well, no, I'm talking about the end of your
show. At the end of the show. That happens too, yeah.
And you had a guy talking about the ReSound hearing aids last week, and I caught the tail end. I thought, well, that's, I wear ReSound hearing aids.
I just traded in my Starkey Halos for the new ReSounds,
right?
And I like them much better.
I do wish you would talk about, you know, like something for us baby boomers.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, some hearing aids and technology, because one reason I got the pair I did, which is about 3 years ago, is because of how nicely it integrated with the iPhone at the time.
Right.
You know. And the watch,
yep,
which is nice.
The only drawback, and you probably noticed this, is every time they put out a new version of iOS, it breaks things. And then
it does.
And then Starkey or ReSound or whoever has to redo it. Apple doesn't have a whole lot of respect for these guys, even though this is part of the accessibility, right? Is your hearing aids are in the accessibility thing. I like it. I love it because I can surreptitiously listen to books. Well, and people think I'm paying attention to them, and I'm really not.
Well, lesson learned from last week is I'm not going to stop your show just because you're talking about all.
Oh no, that's why we do the podcast.
Right, it's like he continues to take some really important calls that I can learn from.
This is not on the radio, our call right now, but it is on the podcast.
Oh, I know, and I know, and a lot of people like me, I don't always get to listen to the show live. You know,
yeah.
Of course, in Atlanta, we don't get your show live anyway. I know we can listen on the internet.
I know,
and
I know. We try.
Those guys around here.
We work. You know, I mean, the folks at the Premier, the Syndicator, are really, really good. But what's happened in radio, unfortunately, is a lot of times they broker weekend time. Instead of using shows like ours, putting real content on, they'll put, you know, ads, basically paid ads on. And so,
yeah, and you're on a weak signal station here.
Yeah,
I guess you already know. And it's at Sunday night, and so that's how I discovered you a few years
ago. Oh, good.
And I thought, man, yeah, and I thought I like this technical expert more than that other one.
Oh, good.
Which one won't mention names.
Don't mention the other one. I don't want to give her any credit.
I didn't say the sex now. So, but I do really enjoy your show. And if I miss the live show, I always listen to the podcast. I'm like a lot of other people. It's like, okay, I feel like I'm
missing. Thank you. Thank you, Johnny.
If I don't go back and listen to it. And then, like I said, I've bought a lot of your sponsored merchandise.
That's the best way to thank me. That's what keeps us on the air here.
So,
thank you.
I appreciate all you do.
Thank you. Did you get the Resound Links Quattro, the new ones?
No, these are rechargeables. Okay. These are about 3 years old, which I paid $5,000
for. I know. Right? They're outrageous.
So,
I know.
And I had some nerve damage in an ear. I already knew my hearing was bad, but then I had a personal injury. It caused some nerve damage. And so my doctor, my ENT, and my audiologist, you know, they're just like, okay, you got to start wearing hearing aids. And I was 51, 52 at the time. And I thought, oh, I'm too young to be
wearing. I'm too young.
I'm too young.
Hey, I got to run, Johnny. Great to talk to you.
Okay, thanks. Take care. I appreciate everything.
All righty. Have a good one. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to hook computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, anything with a chip in it, any technology you want to talk about, I'd love to talk about it with you. Can't promise an answer to every question. We try. Fortunately, there's a vast listening audience. Don't let that intimidate you, but there is, and over 200 stations coast to coast. Somebody out there will know the answer, and if they don't, maybe the chat room will. We have a great chat room going at all times at irc.twit.tv. Those folks are on Team Tech Guy. They help me answer the questions, too. So you're not just calling me. It's a vast, geeky conspiracy to answer your tech problem. 8888 Ask Leo. There is also a website. And a lot of times answers get put up there too because you can leave comments. There's no charge for the website, no sign up. It's really just a resource for you to find answers. And by the way, after the fact, watch or listen to shows because we do video and audio of every show. We put it out as a podcast and you can get those at techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Neil, Phoenix, Arizona. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Neil.
Good afternoon, Leah. Nice to talk to you again. How
nice
you
to talk to you. I'm great. Have you ridden in any of those Waymos going around town?
I have not, actually. I haven't seen. I have seen one or two, but they stopped after a while after someone got killed over.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen a lot of them since.
Yeah.
I'm curious to try one, I suppose, at some point, but I'll wait until they. They're not in my area. When they were out, they were in Tempe, and I'm not there. So.
Right. They people. I've heard from people in your area complain because. Now, remember, it was Uber, I think, that hit somebody, but the Waymo self-driving vehicles, which Waymo's the Google company, are cautious. And so people get stuck behind them as they're cautiously thinking about making a left turn, and it drives them crazy. There have been incidents of Waymos being abused by humans, shot at, yelled at, because people, I guess, are worried about the future. You know, I don't know.
But yeah,
I don't blame them.
Just talk about that.
Yeah. What can I do for you, Neil?
Okay, so I have been upgrading things over time. I've had a lot of your products in here as well, like the last gentleman.
But good man.
More
you.
To the point, I couldn't wait. I wanted to hear what Scott had to say about TVs, but I decided not to wait. So yesterday I went and bought a new TV.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, it's been about 5 years since I had my other TV, so that was time for an upgrade.
What'd you get?
So I bought a Samsung 50-inch UHD U7100.
Okay, very nice. Very nice TV. Do you like it?
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's big. I mean, for an apartment, as I live in, that's big that I'd want to put in here, just being practical about it. And, of course, then I had to buy a new stand to go with it and a new sound bar to go with that and so forth. So
yeah.
It brings you to the question. So I brought it home, put the stand together, hooked everything up finally. And then this morning, I went out and added an Apple TV because I didn't like the Samsung apps.
Yes, I don't either. I agree. Yeah.
So now I went to this Best Buy, I picked up an Apple TV, and then I said, all right, now I'll put my Harmony Hub into the mix and get everything checked with that. And that seemed to go well, all well and good. I got it all programmed and so forth. But here's the only question. Maybe it's a minor point. You tell me. Whenever I turn on the Apple TV, whenever I turn on the activity with the hub,
yeah.
Again, you got the sound bar, the Apple TV, and the television itself.
Yeah.
And whenever it comes on, the TV always wants to invoke its own smart menu over the Apple menu.
Oh, that's annoying.
To stop that. I went into the software, and it says, do you want to auto-launch the smart thing? I said, no. I thought that was the solution. It did that on my other TV, by the way. It's the same thing. You can exit out of this, I found, with the exit button, but it's kind of annoying.
No, it's super annoying.
Am I missing something? You know, that you can't.
Yeah, I don't have that particular setup, so I don't know. I do use a Samsung OLED, an older OLED TV with an Apple TV, and I don't see that. But I don't use the Harmony Hub. I wonder if the Hub, remember the Hub, which is, for those who don't know what we're talking about, is a universal remote. It's a very good one. It's really a cool idea. It's really just a kind of a infrared transmitter. You can actually even use it with Amazon's Echo. And you set it up on the website. You say all your devices, and then you have, as you say, activities. You say, well, I would like to watch, you know, Game of Thrones on the Apple TV, on the Samsung with the audio coming out through the sound bar. And it's supposed to do all that. And it sounds like it is doing all that with the one problem. It's popping up the Samsung menu on top of that.
When it starts. It doesn't do that all the time.
No. Just
on.
Yeah.
That invokes it and you have to get out of the way. It did the same thing. I don't think it's Samsung specific because I had the same issue with my Vizio TV before. And it did the same thing. And I'm just wondering, I think it's part of the hub, not the device.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the hub is sending an additional command that's telling Samsung, hey, pop up that menu. And I'm not sure what that is. I mean, this sounds like what I'm going to have to do is let the chat room kind of, because we have a lot of Harmony Hub users in the chat room. So tell me if anything like this has happened to them and what they've done. It sounds to me like the hub is sending a command that the TV is interpreting as open the menu. And I'm not sure why it's doing that. Maybe after it goes to app, I would look at your activity. Make sure there's nothing extra extraneous in there. I'm sure you've already done that. And you know, did it know about the TV? I presume it did, right? You didn't have to do the manual programming.
Well, I did have to add the TV. It found the Apple TV, interestingly, but not.
But did not find your U7100. Okay.
I had to key them in. Now,
so that may be part of the problem. It may, and that's one of the things that's cool about the Harmony Hub is it will get smarter without you doing anything, as people. You know, you got a newer TV and maybe didn't even know about it. Sounds like it didn't. It wasn't in the database. And so maybe it is triggering an additional command it doesn't need to. So I suppose you could try redoing the activity or at least removing the Samsung from the activity and re-adding it, or even removing the Samsung from your list of devices and re-adding it. It sounds like it's a stray command coming in that tells the Samsung, pop up that menu.
I mean, the only thought would be the activity is called Use Smart TV, and that's the activity that I chose.
Yeah.
You could say Watch TV. There's another activity that's called Watch Regular TV.
Oh, Use Smart TV might imply I also want to see the Smart TV menu. Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't use the other one because I tried that. I thought of that before, but that doesn't give me the options to add the Apple TV to the mix. It won't let me do that. So I have to choose this one, and maybe that's the problem.
And remind me, because I haven't used I have a Harmony Hub, but I haven't used it or programmed it in a while. you can't set up a manual, kind of like say, I want to do this, do it all manually. You have to use something canned in the app.
No. It does say make an activity. I'll have to try that.
I would say do that. See if you can make a dumb activity, a simple activity that says, do this, and do this. And maybe that will be, do a custom activity, and maybe that will be. I think that title, Use Smart TV, worries me. It sounds like it is, in fact, saying, oh, and now that you've done all that, you've turned on the Apple TV, you've turned on the soundbar, you've turned on the TV, pop up the Smart TV menus. That's what you don't want. Try a custom activity that you do just the things you want and see if that works better.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
That's my thought, anyway. I could go home and, you know, it's funny. I, like most geeks, if you sit down in my living room at the coffee table, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 remotes. And, you know, I feel bad. My poor wife looks at it and goes, you can't die because I won't be able to watch TV. At one point, I wrote up a manual, several pages, on how to watch TV. I got the Harmony Hub. I thought, oh, that'll be easier. I could just say, Echo, play Game of Thrones. But, yeah, it didn't work as well as me picking up remote 1, turning it on, picking up remote 2, turning it on, going to setting 3 on remote 4, turning it on. That just works. I'm just, maybe I like the power it gives me. After all, isn't that the most important power? The power of the remote. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. Show today brought to you, maybe you gathered this, by Carbonite. In many ways brought to you by Carbonite. Carbonite data protection is critical for any business, our business too, because think about it. Your business runs on data. I don't care if you're a plumber, a doctor, a candlestick maker. Your data is so important. Your customer list, your supplier list, your accounts receivable, your financial records, all of that stuff's on those hard drives right there. And in the cloud, right? And on servers. And you've got to back it up. Carbonite is the premier data protection platform for business. They are the one site that can do everything. Now, a lot of businesses, you know, they could do one. Oh, we got a backup guy. We got a data protection guy. We got an endpoint guy. No. You want one number to call. One vendor that's responsible for all of it. And nobody can do it better than Carbonite. Carbonite offers, of course, backups, their middle name. They offer scalable, secure server backup solutions, but they're very flexible. Lots of deployment models and recovery options. For instance, you don't have to do this, but a lot of businesses, downtime is the worst thing that can happen. They're down. They're losing money. So Carbonite has something called high availability backup, which means it's replicating in real time, all the time. And it's replicating to the cloud. So if something happens and your entire shop is down, you know, you got ransomware or malware on there and it's all down, you flip a switch, you call Carbonite and they put you online from the cloud instantly. You are down for seconds. That is something a lot of businesses say, boy, I'm going to need that for sure. They have backup and recovery for any conceivable situation, physical drives, virtual machines, cloud. Yeah, you could back up your cloud, which is important. Because you can move from cloud to cloud easily. And if the cloud goes down, you got another cloud to go to. They support over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms. There's another form of data that your company almost certainly has people forget about, but do you have laptops and phones? Do your employees, are they out there in the real world with your data? Now you need what's called endpoint protection. You get end-to-end block-level encryption. 256-bit encryption at rest. Each data set has its own encryption key. That means even if they got one key, they couldn't get all the data. And because of that, they can do true global deduplication. They actually have a patent on this. They're the only company that can do this. They'll manage your bandwidth. They'll keep an eye on battery life, things like that. And if something should go wrong, that laptop or phone should go missing, which happens all the time, they've got remote wipe capabilities too. You combine the technologies you need to build a single comprehensive vendor solution for your workloads, your risk tolerance, your business objectives. It'll simplify your environment, eliminate gaps in data protection. You can only do that if you have one vendor because they know the whole thing, reduce costly redundancies, and of course, they're a secure, trusted provider offering award-winning customer service 7 days a week. Need I say more? Discover Carbonite, data protection platform for business. at carbonite.com. Carbonite, C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E, carbonite.com. And we thank them for their support. Makes the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888, Ask Leo. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, coming up in just a little bit, but let's get back to the phones. Line 3, Bryant, Erie, PA. Hello, Bryant.
Hey, Leo.
How are you? Welcome.
I'm good. So I wanted to talk about the Windows 7 end of support deadline. And
I knew I would get a call about this one. Go ahead.
So my mother has a Windows 7 desktop.
Right.
And she really doesn't have an internet service provider. She uses the Verizon hotspot to provide access to the internet.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, should I just get her a new device, like a Mac Mini or something?
Well, let me give you a little bit of a reprieve. It doesn't, you know, extended support, which means patches for security issues for Windows 7, doesn't end till January 14th, 2020. So the last patch will be Patch Tuesday, January of next year. So you have a year. It's not urgent, but it is, you know, it is going to, it's bothersome because Windows 7 really was pretty close to a perfect version of Windows. They gave away, as you know, a free upgrade to Windows 7 users for about 2 years when Windows 10 came out, but they've discontinued that now. And
still available, I think.
Oh, if you don't, there are ways and ways to get it. Yeah. So does she not want the upgrade?
It's more of the fact she can't download it due to the internet constraints.
Ah, well, you could download it and put it on a USB key and bring it over.
That would probably work.
Yeah. The free upgrade is, if you can get it to work, and I think there are ways to do it. I can't remember what the deal is, but if you can get that to work, I was wondering if Microsoft might bring it back, you know, because of the end of life on Windows 7 next year. But you asked an interesting question, which I'm not sure I would turn you away from. I think a Mac Mini would be an excellent update to her machine. It's got to be at least 5 years old now, right?
She got it when Windows 8 came out, so.
Okay. So I don't know.
Three or four.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's yeah. So, what does she use her computer for, I guess would be the question.
She does a lot of photography.
What does she use for her photography? What software?
GIMP.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm impressed. You obviously got her set up well, Bryant. GIMP, of course, is the open source GNU image processing software that's really good, but kind of hard to use. But it's as powerful as Photoshop. Yeah, but she's figured it out. She's comfortable with it. The nice thing about, and by the way, it's called The GIMP for some reason, but the nice thing about The GIMP is it works on Windows, but it also works on Mac, and really it works on Linux too. So that's another option for you. If she's happy with the hardware, you could always put Linux on that desktop. And and frankly, you know, there are Linux distributions. Ubuntu is a good choice, but there's elementary OS. There are Linux distributions designed for refugees from Windows that are very similar. You know, they'll have a start menu. If she's using GIMP, I mean, you can't put Lightroom on Linux. Linux is a free operating system, but it's widely supported on PCs. Almost every PC will run it just fine. You can, but it doesn't run well. Running Windows apps on it, but if she isn't using a Windows app, she's using a GNU image processor. You know, she might. What else does she do?
Most of her other work is with the browser.
Yeah,
she uses Wix mainly to edit her website.
She does a website. She's pretty sophisticated. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So anything you do with a browser, you can do just fine. Mac, Windows, Linux. In fact, you know, Chrome is available on Linux, as is Firefox. You could also use Chrome OS, but since she's a photographer, she wants, you know, photo editing software. Linux might be a better choice for her. than either of those, and that's free. So this is going to be a hard. You're going to have a difficult conversation with your mother. Mom, we need to talk. I think it's time for you to move. But she might be easy to get her to do that since she's already using GIMP. That's really interesting. How did she come to that? Did you set her up with it?
Yeah, I downloaded it. And
you're obviously...
She really...
Did she's figured out how to use it.
She knows how to edit the color and exposure time. That's about all she
does. That's all she does? Okay. So that would be then another choice would be a Chromebook or a Chrome OS device or a Chrome box. Because it's all browser, so she could do her Wix pages and everything. It's Chrome. And there is limited photo editing, certainly that much photo editing available in it, either through Google's own Photos app, which actually has some pretty good editing in the browser, or something called Polar, which is spelled with two R's, P-O-L-A-R-R. Easier to use than GIMP, and it would do the things she's doing in GIMP very easily. So from a security point of view, by the way, Chrome OS is Linux. With Google special Google sauce on top of it that makes it basically a Chrome browser plus. She can also install Android apps on many Chrome boxes. The Chrome box is inexpensive. That's the other advantage of it, and it's much more secure than any solution out there. So that's another thing to consider. You'll have to go over and set up whatever it is, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So you have it. The good news is you have a year. And actually, honestly, XP went out of life. People continue to use it. If there was a big problem, Microsoft did patch it. And really what finally killed XP was not Microsoft's end of life, but the fact that both Google and Mozilla decided not to update their browsers to work with it. So there were no up-to-date browsers, and that is not a good thing for an operating system. But that took two more years after the end of life. So it may well be that Windows 7 is perfectly adequate for two or three more years, and that might be the easier choice for you since you're going to be doing all the work. But if all she does is browse and photo editing, man, a Chromebook, for a lot of people, Chromebook is a better choice. It's just safer, easier, faster. My daughter in college uses a Chromebook, loves it. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number, website techguylabs.com. We're going traveling. Our traveling guy, Johnny Jett, joins us when we come back right after this. Stay here. Yeah, GIMP Shop is a very nice little add-on to the GIMP that makes it look like Photoshop. Man, that's really cool that, Brian, that you got her to use the GIMP is really cool. You're obviously a bit of a geek. Do you use Linux at home?
I'm using Windows 10.
Okay. And she said, I need photo editing stuff, and you didn't want to spend money? She said, well, what about GIMP? Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. She might really like a Mac Mini, but it's expensive. It's $700 to start. And the nice thing is she can reuse the monitor, keyboard, and mouse she's already got.
Yeah, she doesn't like the keyboards on laptops, so I have to get a desktop.
If you got a Chrome box, it's basically a Mac Mini with Chrome OS, but they're cheap. A lot cheaper. They're half the price. And that would be just like having a Mac Mini. But it wouldn't be a Mac OS. This is an interesting challenge because, you don't want to spend money on something or have her spend money on and really hate it. If you go to a big box store, Best Buy, and get a Chrome box there, I think they'll have a pretty liberal return policy, so she could try it for a few weeks and see if it works for her.
Okay.
That's generally what I prefer people to do. If they don't know they need the high power desktop solutions like Lightroom or Photoshop or video editing, that kind of thing. Honestly, I think it's a good choice. And if there's an issue, she can power wash it. It uses the Google Cloud for storage, so she doesn't have to worry about backup. Acer makes a Chromebox that's really quite nice. and very inexpensive. Let me just see what the price range is. Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. That's the same as a Mac Mini. No wonder it's so nice. 4 gigs of RAM and i7 processor. Wow. You know, even if it were the same price as a Mac Mini, it's more secure. It's $700 or $800. Wow, that's really surprising. The Acer desktop computer Chromebox, because it has an i7 in it. That's nuts. That's nuts. USB 3. That just shows you how people are starting to use this stuff. Are you more comfortable with Macs? No, you said you use Windows 10.
Yeah.
So there's really an argument to be made that she should continue to use Windows only because that's what you know. And you're her tech support guy, right?
Okay. Thanks for the help.
Well, hey, my pleasure. Yeah. Great to talk to you. You're a good boy, a good son, Bryant. Take care. Hello, Mr. Johnny Jet.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
Are you in Minnesota, Toronto, Winslow? Where are you? I see you're in a hotel room. I can tell that much.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're cutting in and out a little bit.
I am in a hotel room.
Yep.
I can call you on my landline.
No, that's all right. Keep going.
That's the San Diego Convention Center.
All right. I almost said Vancouver because of that tent at the end of the pier there, but
yes.
San Diego. Okay.
I'm speaking at the travel show. I'm at the Omni Hotel, about to check out and walk across the street and go speak there. But I have my son, and this is like his new favorite hotel because all the trains come right by.
Does he stand at the window and watch?
Oh, my God. That's what he does. And every 5 minutes, a train comes, and he's like, you know, look, there's a train.
Oh,
and
that's
like,
so cute.
Oh, my God.
He likes choo-choos. You're going to have hilarious. To. Now, this is a new task for Johnny Jet to go on a train trip. You know, there's a great trans-Canadian train trip you could take.
Yep. So I think we'll start off with something short. Like, we might do San Diego, L.A.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
See how that goes.
Yeah, see how it goes.
But, yeah. So anyway, last week I called in from Hawaii.
Right.
And while I was in Hawaii, a travel writer I follow tweeted that she's using this Shaka app, to drive around the islands. And it's basically having a tour guide at your own speed. And it's on iOS and Android. So they sell different packages, you know, for whatever island you're going to. So, you know, on Oahu, they have the Circle Island driving tour, also have the South Shore driving tour there. So, you know, if you're going to Maui, you can just get the classic road to Hana driving tour. I mean, there's all different roads and routes, and for all four major islands. Kauai and the Big Island are the other two.
I've heard of this, and I've heard it's great. I wish it were available everywhere in the world, but this is a Hawaiian specific thing. We're going to Kauai in April.
Yeah.
So
they have four in Kauai. Yeah. They have the North Shore Kauai driving tour, the Waimea to Napali, and you're going to Napali, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it has rave reviews. So it's not free. It's, you know, it starts at $3.99 depending on which one you get, and I think it goes up to $19.99.
So you pay for each individual tour.
You do, but you go at your own speed. You do not need cell service or Wi-Fi.
Oh,
it's because it uses GPS.
Oh, nice.
And you go at your own pace, and it does, you know, does a tour with turn by turn directions. So it sounds pretty darn good. Usually when I go to Hawaii, I don't rent a car, but this actually might give me some incentive to do it.
Yeah. I think in Kauai, we're pretty much going to have to, because
you really do.
Yeah.
We were in Kauai in July, and we took an Uber. Actually, they picked us up in a pickup truck. Jack's like, this is great. But, you know, our luggage is in the back of the truck, you know, and it's raining because Kauai, it rains often. So keep that in mind that, you know, there's not a lot of Ubers.
I think there. We're renting a car. But this would be fun. I'm going to download these, and I'll give you a report back in a couple of months on how these work.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you for the tip. Yeah. Shaka.
All right, good.
Shaka guide. If you Google it, you can find it very quickly.
Yeah, and, you know, Shaka, this is what the Shaka sign is. Everyone, you know, in Hawaii does it. It's like, you know, Shaka bra.
Shaka bra.
Also, while we were in Hawaii, by the way, we used a service called Baby Quip, BabyQuip.com.
Yeah.
So obviously it's for people with young kids. So, you know, if your listeners don't have kids, maybe their kids have kids or wherever, but it's a really useful service. So Natalie and I used to always travel carry on only before we had Jack. I mean, literally we'd go around the world.
You were famous for this. Yeah.
Just carry on only. You know, we'd bring at least a week's worth of clothes and either, you know, find a laundromat to do it for us or do it ourselves.
Right.
So, but what this does is, you know, in Hawaii, we instead of bringing a stroller, we rented it from them.
So it's a baby gear rental in destinations. Everything.
Yeah, and actually, and we went to Seattle a year ago, and it was the only time we ever traveled carry-on with Jack because we used this service, and they had everything waiting for us at our hotel. They drop it off at the hotel. The hotel either tells you to come down and get it, or they put it in your room. When we were in Seattle, I think we stayed at the Thompson Hotel, and they had it in our room. They had the high chair. They had books. Oh, wow. They had food. They had diapers.
Oh,
and you can order everything online and just go through it. It's in 300 different destinations in the U.S. and Canada. So it's a great alternative to, you know, not traveling with everything that you need. Because these days when we travel, you know, it's basically we have a U-Haul truck behind us.
Yeah, I know. I remember the diaper bag that was bigger than a Mountaineer's backpack. I remember those days very well. This is nice. So you get there and everything you need is there.
It is. And this is especially useful if you're going on a short trip because, you know, a long weekend, it will save you – actually, it could save you airline fees and it will just save you insanity. But if you're going long term, it'll be pricey. You know, we had a big stroller, which was $14 a day, but they have stuff that you can get for $3 a day, like a I can't remember what was $3 a day. Do you remember? She's like, I can't remember. Anyway, but they have toys. You can get toys. They have a whole long list of things, and it's a great service for families.
Yeah, so, it really sounds fun.
Yes.
BabyQuip.com.
Exactly.
So we are now following in the footsteps of Johnny Jet, Natalie Jet, and Baby Jack Jet.
Yeah, and by the way, I was speaking yesterday here at the travel show in San Diego, and there were so many people that when I said I do your weekly radio show, people just started clapping. They all came up to me and they're like, I know you from Leo. We love you, Leo. We love Leo. Obviously, they all love Leo.
Oh, I'm very touched.
But it was really cool to have.
Are you speaking again today?
Yeah, 2:15.
2:15. So if you're in San Diego, where's the travel show?
At the convention center, right across the street from my hotel.
Do you need tickets? How does that work?
You do need tickets, and actually...
Can I get them at the door?
You can get them at the door, and if you use the promo Johnny, I think they give you $5 off. Oh. They're not expensive.
Yeah.
But
And there are lots of travel providers there. There's talks, there's booths, and things like
there
that.
There are. Tons.
What
and
a
Josh
great
Gates
idea.
Is actually about to speak. We just had dinner with Josh Gates last night. He's a great guy. He has a show on Discovery and Travel Channel, and he's about to speak. So they always have really good speakers.
Johnny and Natalie and Jack are travel royalty now. You, when they go places, people say, oh, look over there. Two influencers for the price of one. And then you got to get Baby Jack, his Instagram feed, and it could be, you know, Baby Jack Jet, traveler. And
yeah, we gotta work on that.
Your wife is a Pinterest influencer. Johnny's got a website, johnnyjet.com. He's also on Twitter as Johnny Jet and Instagram too. And Natalie's on Pinterest as Natalie Discala, DISCALA. And then I think what are we gonna all call Jack? I mean, Jack Jet's pretty good. Jack Jet.
Jackie Jet.
I think he could be the first baby travel influencer.
Well, listen, when he was a year old, he would take my cell phone while we're on the plane and start taking pictures out the window.
Yeah, see?
And I'm like, what?
If you're going to San Diego, stay at the Omni because the trains are cool.
Thank you, Johnny. We'll talk again next week. Have a great talk at the San Diego Travel Fair. We're going to go back to the phones in just a bit. 888-ASK-LEO. Call me with your tech woes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Little Jackie Jet, he's a traveling kid.
He could have a theme song.
Can you see him? He's on the bed behind me.
Oh, is he napping?
Hey, Jack. Oh, Jack, what's up? Jack, you watching Paw Patrol?
He's behind the pad there.
iPad.
The iPad.
Yeah, he's a little too close to it. He's watching
Paw Patrol.
He's definitely watching Paw Patrol or Curious George.
How old is he, two?
Two.
Wow. That's amazing.
But to keep him quiet while I'm doing the show.
Oh, yeah, Paw Patrol.
You got to put the show on.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
He's
so quiet, you can't get him to say hi.
hey, Jack, can you at least say hi? Jack, say hi.
Hey, Jack. He's looking around. Who am I saying hi to? What are you talking about, Dad? Yeah. I'm telling you, this is a brilliant idea. Baby Instagram, be huge.
We talked about it. We just don't know how much we want to expose Jack.
Yeah, but, I don't blame you, actually.
Maybe it'll be I try to put photos of him either from behind or I put sunglasses on him.
Yeah, you're smart.
So
you're smart.
You know,
yeah.
I just don't know.
Because the real reason, I don't think it's dangerous, but I think the real reason is he should be a choice and he's too young to choose. So you don't want to put him in a situation where he's now an Instagram celebrity and he didn't even get to decide. That wouldn't be the right thing to do. So yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, he loves travel and he's been on, I think, 60 flights.
Golly.
Insane.
Golly. That's awesome.
Yeah. And he's a great little traveler. I mean, I really thought having a baby would really put a cramp in my travel style, but it has not.
I'm so glad. And you get to bring your family with you, and that makes it even better, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah.
I don't even get on a plane without them. It's very difficult.
You know, I wouldn't want to travel alone because I every time I'd see something, I'd want to say, hey, Lisa, look at that. And then she wouldn't be there. And I'd be, no, I don't like this. I wouldn't want to do it alone. Part of the fun of it is sharing it with your loved ones, right?
It's the best. As a joke, you know, for the 10-year challenge, Facebook challenge, I did a picture today of me on a bed with like 10 girls from 2009.
Oh, man.
To me with my wife and son and Santa.
Oh.
And it's the best. I wouldn't want to change it.
Who were the 10 girls, Johnny?
You know.
Did Natalie want to know what was that all about?
She hasn't seen it yet.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not on Facebook anymore. I don't want to know the story. I don't want to know. Hey, have a great time in San Diego. I love San Diego. It's one of my favorite places to go. And I'm glad that we have fans down there. That's nice.
You have a lot of fans there. Not some. You have a lot.
Oh, that makes me feel good. I love to go down to the Hotel Del. Spend a few days
actually,
down there.
I'm looking at the rooftop from here.
Oh, so the Omni's on Coronado.
No, actually, but Coronado, if you can look straight across, you can see the flag and the.
Oh, I see. You're on the other side of the water. I get it.
I'm on it right, directly across from it.
Yeah.
I mean, directly.
We like the Del. I just like the oldie timey feel of it, and the beach is nice. And I don't know. I just always like to stay there. But I should
the
probably.
Hard Rock's right here.
Oh, this is kind of a nice area. We were thinking of staying in Old Town and going to the ghost, going on one of the ghost, trails at
ghost
night.
Tour.
That'd be funny, the ghost tours, yeah.
Sure.
All right, Johnny, have a great one.
Thanks. Take
have
care,
fun.
You too.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. On we go with the show, line two, Jim in Birmingham, Alabama. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I am great. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I have a little issue, and I just need a little advice. Over the weekend, I guess yesterday, I got a request to terminate my Google account.
What?
And it says, dear Gmail customer, it's got a trademark and all that. It says, you submitted a request to terminate your Gmail account, and essentially, we're working on that, and it'll be done within 3 days. To cancel this termination, reply this email. It says you'll lose all your spam, trash, drafts, inboxes, and everything soon.
So here's the trick. First of all, this could very well probably is a phishing scam. So,
I think so. You
click the link, and I would bet the first thing to do is say, okay, now you got to log into your Google account. And by the way, they can make this look all real and official. Here's the trick. Look at what the address is they want you to send it to. If it's something like support@gmail.com, that's real. But if it's user5372@gmail.com, it's phishing. So, I Google can terminate people's accounts, and you can, in fact, ask to close your Google account. You certainly don't want it closed. This would be so you don't want to ignore it, I guess, but it does sound a little suspicious. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Scooter X in the chat room. Our chat mod has found at hoax-slayer.net request to terminate your Google account scam email. Oh, yeah. The email is not from Google. The claim that your Google account is about to be terminated is untrue. In fact, the email is, yes, a phishing scam designed to trick you into divulging your personal information to criminals. If you reply as instructed, you will then be asked to supply your Google account username and password in order to cancel the supposed termination request. So, it's a phishing scam. At least it's one we've seen before. In general, I'm so glad you called because, well, you didn't get bit. But it's also good to know how to determine if it's a scam or not. And one way, of course, is to Google it, and you'll find this article. But you still want to make sure it's not a legitimate request. So you want to look at what they're asking you to do. And always be suspicious if they ask for anything like credentials.
Well, it raised another question, or at least a concern. If something were to happen, official or not, and I lost my all my email addresses, and I said, well, maybe I need to go in and change the settings and
save everything, right? Yeah.
P-O-P.
Never, well, not necessarily, but never assume that, you know, Google, Facebook, Twitter, or anybody else can't just cancel your account, because they can. Usually, Google is pretty good about it. They'll only terminate your account for actions that violate their terms of service. You know, if you started sending a lot of spam from a Gmail account, well, you'd get terminated, things like that. So you haven't done any of that stuff, so it's highly unlikely. And certainly nobody can just contact Google and say, here's my address, and please cancel my account. They can't do that. They'd have to log in and do it. And so I would, in general, these are our scams. It's a worthwhile thing. So what do they say? Send us an email?
Yes, his reply.
Okay. So look at what the reply address is. And almost certainly...
It's not visible. That's, I guess, one of the keys to it. It's final notice, and you don't see a reply address.
Yeah. Hover the link, the mouse over the link they give you to click, and you'll know immediately. You know, if you hover it over there, you get a little pop-up that says, this is the link, this is where it leads. Don't click it, because that's not worth it. That's just a signal that you're a live one, and it'll just add to the harassment.
All right.
Yeah, I think you're fine. You can, Beatmaster in the chat room is giving me some good advice, which is you can check to see if you're still good with Google by going to myaccount.google.com. Now, to answer your question, though, which is a very good question, what you can do at any time, Google has something called Google Takeout, which is not Chinese food by delivery, but in fact, a way to take all your data out of Google. So if you are concerned, you can download everything from Google. You can use, as you say, you said maybe I should use a client to download my mail, but you don't need to do that. You can actually download your mail with Google Takeout, and because you want to continue to use an IMAP client. That's really the best way to handle Google Mail. Pop Mail. I just transferred all my Google Mail to my personal server, 40 gigabytes of data. That's an awful lot of mail. You don't really want to mess with that. That would use up a hard drive, quite a bit of a hard drive. But you can get all your data. Google gives you good access and good controls, too. If you go to your dashboard, google.com/dashboard, you can see what they know. You can download your data there. Myaccounts.google.com to see if your account is, in fact, in jeopardy. I'm sure it's not.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for the question. It's really a good reminder that when you store stuff like Gmail on a third-party site, there's always the risk, however small, that you'd lose it. They'd discontinue your account or whatever. I think Google's pretty safe. I think they'd give you a heads up. And if you're not doing something nefarious, you're probably not going to ever face anything like this. Google wants you as a customer. They make money off of you. So they don't want to disable your account for any reason, unless they really have to. And I think that'd be an interesting scam for hackers to try to perpetrate. But I think they couldn't do it unless they could log into your account. So I think you're all right. However, use Google Takeout. If you Google Google Takeout, you'll find how you can get all of your Google data and store it if you'd like to. There's also a, it's takeout.google.com. There's also a, to see what Google has, what of your information, like location information and so forth. You can also go to google.com/dashboard. Google, I think of all the companies that are collecting information about you, is the most transparent. It doesn't mean they're not collecting information about you. They certainly are, but they're the most transparent about it. You might, I do, and you might want to always download your contacts. That's an easy thing. It's not very big. You might want to download anything that's on Google Drive. That's easy to do at Takeout. Maybe your calendars. Email, yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of data. I stopped using Google Mail a couple of years ago. Started using another company called Fastmail, which I like a little better than Gmail. And now lately I've set up a personal server at home. And I'm actually transferring all my Google data to that, just so I have it. Because it is a database. It goes back to 2004. It's funny, I'm looking at the oldest messages on there, and it's people asking me for an invitation to use Gmail. Back when it first started, 14 years ago, 15 years ago. So that it's kind of fun to have that archive, and yeah, it's 40 gigs, but I have a lot of hard drive space. I'll store it somewhere. Good, very good questions. Always be suspicious and look at what the emails are asking you to do, and if they're asking you for credentials, login credentials, or credit card numbers, things like that, then big red flags pop up. You really have to think about what it is they want and why they might want it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to take a little time out for the top of the hour. Yeah, but we'll be back. Oh, yes, with lots more of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Don't forget the website, free and open to all, techguylabs.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet. We got your home theater, we got your smartphones, smart watches, all the stuff with chips in it. In your life today. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'd love to hear from you. If you're outside that area, it's still toll free, but you've got to use Skype out or something else, some other VoIP solution that lets you call real phone numbers. 888-827-5536. We have a website so that you don't have to write anything down. And that's techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. We also offer free podcasts of every show, both audio and video. You'll find them at techguylabs.com. Line one is George, Toronto, Canada. Hi, George. How are you?
Hi, Leo. Thank you so much for the Twit Network. I really enjoy it very much.
Thank you. Our podcast network, for those who don't know, twit.tv. Thanks for the chance to give it a plug. TWIT. I'm a twit. I'm a big twit.
So am I. I have a question for you. I have an Amazon HD Fire tablet, and I was told that I shouldn't attempt or try to install the Google Play Store on it. I wanted to know if it is safe. I don't plan on using any shady programs. It's just a couple of like YouTube and stuff like that that's available in the Play Store. And I'm sort of confused. I don't know if these people are putting these apps that enable that feature in order to gain access to my tablet, or am I running into any danger doing so?
I have an Amazon Fire tablet as well, and I put the Google Play Store on it, and it's easy to do, but don't do it with an app. You don't need an app to do that.
Okay.
So that's the one. If somebody offers an app to do that, then that may be a little suspicious. So remember that these Amazon Fires are based on Android. Android is an open source operating system. And Google then makes it a little closed source by putting Google stuff on top of it. But anybody can take Android and modify it in any way they want and put it on any device they want, as it's separate from the Google stuff. So that's what Amazon did. They made their Amazon operating system. They based it on Android. So it is Android. That's the nice thing. And that means it can run the Play Store. It doesn't come with the Play Store. It comes with Amazon's store. That's one of the deals, by the way. If you don't, right. If you want to use the open source, they call it AOSP, Android Open Source Project. If you want to use the AOSP version of Android, you may not put Google's stuff on there. But it's trivially easy to put Google's stuff on there. Just you want to make sure that you do it safely. And so, you know, it's not a big thing to do. I will send you to the place I use to do it, which is a website, totally reliable, trustworthy website called How to Geek. And
okay.
I use them all the time. These guys are really great. They have a lot of good information. And, you know, you'll have to turn off the setting that says, you know, apps, download apps from unknown sources. You'll have to check that box. That's to protect you. They want to, but they can't prevent you from, unlike the iPhone, which does prevent you from downloading from anything but the Apple Store. Android lets you download from other places, but there's a setting. And then you're going to have to download 4 files to install it. They call them APKs, the Google Account Manager, the Google Services Framework, Google Play Services, and then the Play Store. And the real key here is downloading them from reliable sources. How to Geek points to the APK Mirror. And while this is a third-party site, APK is the file format for installers for Google apps, Android apps. And while APK Mirror is a third party, not endorsed by Google, I found it to be trustworthy. So follow the instructions at How to Geek. Depending okay. on your Fire, the instructions might vary depending on which version you have. But it really works quite well. And I did it on my Amazon Fire just before I ever recommended it, just to make sure it was safe. And it is. I wouldn't do an app that says it'll do it. That sounds a little sketch.
Would I leave all the automatic updates for the Play Store and all of the Google yeah. things? So just I would operate it in the exact same fashion.
At that point, it becomes just like a Google Android device. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I was just worried that I might brick it along the way. I was told that if I do put it along the way, because Amazon may not like it, they might just turn it into a big brick, and then I won't have anything. I know that units are fairly cheap, but I didn't want to risk
it. Just between you and me, I'm not going to speak for Jeff Bezos at Amazon, but just between you and me, Amazon doesn't put it on there only because, in my opinion, only because that's the deal. If you use the open source version of the Android operating system, you're not allowed to, you know, you have to license it from Google. So it's not Amazon that would be mad at you. It's Google. Amazon probably thinks this is great because the key from Amazon's point of view is that you get this Fire tablet. And of course, it's a big ad for Amazon products and services. It will remain that way. They don't care if you put Google's Play Store on there. Not at all. Google might. But Google has historically not done anything to. This is a very common practice for people who have Android phones and use different firmware, different ROMs. You know, if you have a Samsung phone, you don't like how Samsung does Android, you can download somebody else's version of Android. And almost in every case, you have to then separately download the Google stuff. And Google could stop this, but they haven't. So I think nobody minds. Google makes money if you use Google's browser. Amazon makes money if you use the tablet, because not because they sold you the tablet for a lot, they're cheap, but because it's an ad for Amazon. You'll use Amazon Prime and Amazon services and buy stuff on Amazon. So everybody wins. I don't think anybody would be mad at you.
Great. Thank you so much, Leo. And thank you very much for your network.
Hey, it's great. Thanks for listening to our podcasts. The Tech Guy radio show is owned by the Premier Networks. I work for them as an employee. So this radio show is my day job, I guess, my weekend day job. But when I first started doing this back in 2004 on our mothership at KFI in Los Angeles, I realized I'd be only working, you know, 6 hours a week. Now, if I had been smart, I would have said, that's great. I'll go to the beach, enjoy life, and then come in 6 hours a week. But no, I was young. I was foolish. I was ambitious. Heck, this was 15 years ago. What did I know? And I said, I should do something with those other days. And I started a podcast network. We do, and now I come in every day doing podcasts. So the radio show's on the weekends, but we also do a big news show called This Week in Tech. That gave the name to the network, TWIT, This Week in Tech. I do a Mac Break Weekly, Mac show for Mac users. I do iOS Today for iOS users, Windows Weekly for Windows users, This Week in Google for Internet users, Security Now for everybody. I enjoy it. I like doing it. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, there's a lot more than just the radio show. You can find them all at the podcast site, which is twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've got lots more to do. We are not done saving the world one computer at a time. I'll go back to the phones right after this. Thomas Costa Mesa, California. Hi, Thomas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. We talked a few months ago. I'm getting ready to take off on my walk across America.
Oh, yeah. How exciting.
Buy some solar panels.
When are you gonna leave?
I leave next Saturday.
Oh, man, it's close.
Yeah.
Where are you leaving from?
I'm flying to Charleston, South Carolina, driving up to spend a week with my son there, and then driving up to Holden Beach, North Carolina, and walking back home.
So you're going from North Carolina to where's home?
Newport Beach, Costa Mesa.
Wow.
Yep, down here in San Diego.
How long you think it's going to take?
I've got it mapped at about 9 months.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You're going to get foot sore, well, but that's life, right? You'll be in great shape by the end of it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Last time we talked to you, we talked about solar panels for my cart, and asked to talk again once I figured that whole situation out. I ended up getting real simple, 32-watt foldable.
Nice.
Up on top of it, and then I ended up buying two pretty good sized battery packs that are mounted in waterproof containers on the inside of the cart, and those power everything I need.
So you've gone out some weekend trips just to test everything out.
Yeah, and if I can't get out, then I just let it sit out in the alley behind my house.
And how long does it take to charge up the batteries?
It takes a full day.
So you'll be able to have those panels open as you walk.
Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So, yep.
That sounds great.
And
what a good solution.
Yeah, it worked out.
As I remember, you're going to keep an iPad charged, your phone. Are you doing a laptop too?
No, just iPad and phone just and iPad. The Garmin InReach.
Yeah, obviously you need that, of course.
Right.
Nice.
And, so I just want to thank you for that. And then also your listeners over the last couple of months have kicked in over $400 in donations to the Pediatric Cancer Research Foundation. And one is far away as Sweden.
Somebody
who listens to you online.
Where's the website so we can get some more donations before you leave?
Sure. Great. Thanks. It's movingonwest.com.
Movingonwest.com.
Yep.
And you leave next weekend.
Next Saturday, yeah.
Oh. Are you at all nervous?
Oh, yeah. A little bit. I mean, I'm not scared. Just, you know, I've never done anything like that.
Yeah, but it must sound, it also has some excitement, anticipation, right?
Oh, yeah. Far more excitement.
Have you planned a bunch of stops, like places you've wanted to see in national parks and things like that?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, definitely based it on hitting all three mountains and visiting people.
Oh, what fun. Oh, yeah, you got people. Good. So you can sleep in a bed once in a while.
Yeah.
Make friends along the way. Yeah. Good.
Perfect.
Nice. Anyway. Well, is there any other way I can help you? Because I'm very excited. Movingonwest.com. I'll kick in some too.
You did it. You told your listeners about
good.
It.
Good.
And they were awesome. And you helped me with the solar panels.
Man. And then are you going to post to movingonwest.com as you go with pictures and things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll be regularly blogging. And we're also actually filming a small documentary about it. A buddy of mine is a filmmaker up in L.A. And so we've got the teaser to the documentary up on my website now.
Can I ask how old you are, Thomas? It sounds like you have adult kids.
I just turned 50 last month.
50. So this is for your 50th.
It is. My dad says it's a midlife crisis.
Hey, but a lot better, maybe not, than a T-top Corvette. Yeah. Oh, this is really cool. And it's a nice site. You did a great job with the site.
Thanks.
I think this is
really neat.
There's
a picture of the cart right there in the front.
Yeah, I see it. So yeah. Yeah. So. Nice. Well, it sounds like you're set.
Yep.
What a great adventure. So you quit your job?
I used to own a restaurant, and I sold my half of it to my business partner and started training for this about 8 months ago.
Neat. And, of course, it's for a great cause. PCRF is a really good cause, and the Pediatric Cancer Research Foundation. So it's a nice way to raise a little money for a great cause and then explore our country.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty lucky, actually.
Yeah, thank God I'm way too old to do that. But have fun.
There's a guy out there doing it right now. He's 74.
Oh,
in the middle of the walk. So not off the hook.
How many people are out there doing this?
Right now there are three.
Just three?
That are in the middle right now. About 5 to 8 do it a year.
And why did you choose January to leave?
Well, you have to get to Denver early enough in the year. You can't go over the Rockies. So
right.
You unfortunately have to start early.
So you'll be summering in the Rockies.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Have a great trip.
Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks for checking in, Thomas. And movingonwest.com if you want to support him or follow him or maybe kick in a little for pediatric cancer research, which is a great charity. Really a great idea. Mara, Los Angeles. Hi, Mara.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I have a question based on something you said a little while ago about, I just caught the tail end of it, but about hacking Google or Target, like that.
Breaches. So, yes, yes.
A few weeks ago, I decided to check my stock brokerage account online, and I couldn't get in. So I called them, and they told me that, well, you changed the password yesterday.
Oy.
And I said, no, I didn't. And the upshot of that conversation was that they said that I had asked to have papers emailed to me to authorize all the funds being withdrawn. It's just so lucky that I happened to look at
kidding.
Right after this happened. But the next day, fraud called me, and they said they had listened to the entire conversation and that it was obviously a man imitating a woman's voice.
Oh, Lord. You know what the problem is? Customer service reps. Customer service is the first two words, and they want to help. And even if it's a guy talking like this, They're too helpful. So you need to set a pin on that. I'm sure they've told you what you need to do to secure it.
Wait, I want to tell you the rest of it.
Well, hang on, because I got to take a break. I do want to hear the rest of it, though, because it's a great cautionary tale for all of us. You know, one thing, they should send you an email whenever there's a request like that. You should immediately get an email. I'll tell you some things you can do to prevent it in the future, but I want to hear what happened. Wow. Hi. This is Mara. I'd like my money now. That worked? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have to say, it sounds like the brokerage is at fault on this. But we'll find out. I'm not going to talk to you during the break, Mara. Normally, I would talk to you during the break, but I want everybody to hear this, so we'll get it on the radio. Mara, did you get to hear the phone call? Because that would be fun to hear somebody impersonating you.
No, I didn't. But I sometimes think about calling them and asking them to play it for me. But I've been so busy figuring out LastPass and all the other
stuff, man,
I've done.
So
protected.
Let me recap. So Mara, for some reason, got the idea she should check her online brokerage account. She hadn't done it in a while. And they said, well, your password changed yesterday. You called in. In fact, you asked for all the paperwork to transfer your money out. What? Fortunately, you called them. I mean, did you not get an email from them saying, this had happened? Usually that's what happens.
They told me that the call came from my number and that they sent the letter to my email address, and I never got it. And this is basically why I'm calling.
That's a cause for concern. Your number's easy. It's easy to spoof your number. I can spoof your number right now if I know it. By the way, this is the worst kind of attack because this is a targeted attack at you. They know about you. See, most hacking, most malware is casts a wide net. But somebody, probably from one of these breaches that I was talking about earlier on the show, got some critical information about you. Maybe you were a Marriott Starwood member. And remember that big Marriott hack that half a billion accounts got out? Well, it had name, address, phone number. Maybe they didn't know who your brokerage was, but they called around till they found the one that was, right? And they had, they spoofed your number. So that's, by the way, if the brokerage is using that to verify you, that's terrible. Get a new brokerage. They should do a lot more than that.
I took care of all the security measures that I thought I had. I checked everything else, and it didn't appear that they had done anything else to me on my computer, bank, or whatever.
Yeah, no. They got the gold. They got the gold mine. Who cares what else? They got the money.
But, Leo, here's the main reason I'm calling you. All of this stuff I know you can explain. But I asked them how they finally verified and allowed this person to do this. They said, we gave him 4 multiple choice questions that were taken from public records. I think we've all had these questions. They're sort of like, which of these banks did you have a mortgage with 8 years ago? Or what was your address? Which one of these?
They use your credit report for that. So that's how they got it.
They answered every question correctly, and that's the thing that I just can't understand.
Yeah, that's how they got it. So whoever did this to you got information about you, probably got your social. And what they asked for, they went to this was a bit of a project, but they knew there was a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow. They probably went to, first of all, it could have been from the Equifax breach. Right there, that would be enough.
Right.
Remember Equifax, everybody's in Equifax's database. There are 3 big credit reporting companies, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. You don't have a choice. If you apply for credit in any way, part of the fine print on the contract will say, we will submit information about you to these credit reporting bureaus. They collate information about you. And, of course, when you apply for credit, that's who the lender will call and say, well, is Mara good for it? If they got your information, let's say they got it from Equifax. Maybe they didn't, but let's say they did. They may have gotten your entire credit report. That's where all that information comes from, where you lived, what your previous phone number was. It's all in your credit report. So
where you had a mortgage, which bank?
Yeah, that's in your credit report. And by the way, that's why that brokerage used it, because they have your credit report. So they can look at it and say, well, so they had that information, but so did the bad guy. So there's lots of ways to get it. This is a big problem we all are subject to. First of all, Equifax leaked this information out in a big database breach. So very, very likely that came from that. But let's say they got your name, address, phone number from the Marriott breach. And then, they need your social to get your credit report. So maybe once they got that information, they found another source. A lot of times bad guys can collate these sources together. The breach, the thing I was talking about at the beginning of the show, collection number 1, which has 773 million passwords in it. That breach is 2 years old. It's so worthless. The hacker who has it sells it for $45. 773 million passwords, $45. It's nothing. He says, I got much newer stuff. These breaches happen all the time. If you go to haveibeenpwned.com, that was the site I was mentioning. The front page, you could put in your email address, but I guarantee you, your email address is known. Click the tab at the top that says passwords and put in the passwords to your bank, your email, a variety of places, because that will tell you something. If your password is known, and some of them will be for sure, then that means that bad guy had all sorts of ways to get this information. So that's why we always say a couple of things. I hate secret questions. Now you know why. I hate phone number verification or text message verification because I have a good friend, Ray. Ray just got all of his stuff, all of his accounts stolen because they spoofed his cell phone. And when the text message came in, it went to the bad guys. And the bad guys were able to steal his Gmail account. And once you get somebody's email account, then you just go to all their other accounts and you say, oh, I forgot my password. Send it to me. They send it to the Gmail account. Bad guy has access to that. You're an open book. So I'm glad you're looking at LastPass. The other thing that's very important is two-factor. Use two-factor everywhere you can. That's the one where if they not only need your password, but you need to also submit a code that's good for 30 seconds. It's not it can't be stolen because it's only good for 30 seconds. It's a one-time password.
So that's the one where they send you a text.
But the problem, the problem with text is they can be spoofed. You if any company offers you two-factor with a text, take it because it's better than nothing, but it's not fully secure. Because
how do you get a secure one?
Well, they have applications like Google Authenticator that you put on your phone. Somebody would actually have to physically have your phone. I have in my pocket a little dongle called a YubiKey that does the same thing. They'd have to physically get that key whenever you can do that. But remember, a lot of these services have a fallback because convenience trumps security. They have a fallback to an SMS message, which means it's nothing. It's no good. If somebody knows that much about you, they knew your phone number. They probably spoofed your phone number, which means they were able to get any text messages. So that wouldn't have worked either. So you got to always look for a two-factor that does not allow text messaging authentication. Google is good on this, by the way. Gmail is a good... Do you use Gmail for your email?
I do use it, and I'm embarrassed to say AOL as well, which I'm...
AOL is not good.
Right.
Most ISPs are not good. But Google will allow you to use two-factor that does not have text messaging as a backup. That's what you want.
Okay.
It's very hard when somebody targets you, as they have, it's very hard to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm so sorry. But, Mari, you got it all turned around, right?
I did everything. But both the bank and the stock brokerage now have a secret word.
That's good. That's what you want. In fact, call your cell provider. This is how you avoid SMS hacking and say, please do not give my SIM card or my information to anybody who doesn't give. I want a PIN. I got a text message about a year ago from T-Mobile saying, we have a problem. You better set up a PIN. So set up. That's those secret words, those PINs. They should be set up everywhere. And that shouldn't be stored anywhere, and not in your credit account or anywhere. I'm sorry it happened, Mara. Thank God you caught it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
For explaining it to me.
Oh, man, what a mess. You know, but you're not alone. The good news is you didn't get your identity stolen yet. What you now also want to do is you want to go to Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion and put a credit freeze on your account.
Okay.
I'm going to put, I can give you a link, but I can put it also a link in the show notes to a description on how to do this. And why this is so important is these people have enough information to take out to do identity theft at this point. And that is a problem. So there's two kinds of, there's a fraud alerts and there's a credit freeze. Now, the downside of a credit freeze is you will have to unfreeze it to get a loan, to buy a car, to get a credit card, anything like that. But the good side is so will a bad guy. So he can't he can't use your credit report against you. So you definitely want to put a credit freeze on all of these. It used to cost money. Thank goodness, there's finally a federal law has been passed that says they can't charge you to do a credit freeze.
Okay, well, I do know how to do that, and I didn't do it because it did seem like such a hassle. But now that you've told me this, it's more of a hassle if I get identity.
Yeah.
So I'll do it today.
Yeah, because the bad guys now know enough to do that if they wanted to. They clearly have your social. Yeah. So they have your social, they have, and that means they could do anything they want. So you absolutely, and by the way, you know, you if they ask why, you say, well, this is why, and they'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, of course. They don't like these because that's how they make money, is selling your information. But right. As of September 21st, credit freezes and unfreezes are free. They used to be $45.
How do you unfreeze it if you need to?
You call them.
Oh, well, that's simple enough.
It's not horrible. You know, you will want to, as always, with everybody, set up pins and second factor and whatever you can. I'm glad you got LastPass. That will help a lot. Clark Howard, if you search for Clark Howard, I don't know if Clark, I've referred people to this before, but I don't know if Clark's updated it for the new law. So it might say it costs money. It doesn't anymore as of September.
Okay.
But Clark Howard has a good article on why you want to do this, what the different ramifications are. It's at clark.com if you search for credit freeze. Yes, okay. He updated this.
When I heard him on your show recently, I did sign up with him.
Yay. Good.
I'll do that.
Good.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm sorry it happened, Mara. Boy, you had a instinct. You're very fortunate. It's interesting. I'm worried that you didn't see that email. That means almost certainly they have access to your email. So I presume you've changed your email password by now.
I have. Since I got LastPass, I've changed everything.
Yay! So the bad guys had access to that. The fact that they don't now is very good.
Yeah. Okay, I haven't seen anything else. No other evidence. The bank, computer, nothing so far. But I will do that credit freeze.
Yeah, just remember, they have that information. So, you know, they went after the big bucks. You know, that's the payoff. That's terrible. And it very likely came from a breach.
I can see that now. But the reason they needed papers was that they weren't just asking for the money. They were saying, sell everything.
Oh, man. That's a lot of money. They wanted it. They wanted everything you had.
But isn't that odd that you would just call and say, sell everything, like in your IRA?
No. Why is that odd? They want to cash in. That's what I'd do if I were a bad guy. You don't rob half the bank. You rob the whole bank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll put links to a variety of resources, including a great article by Clark Howard on credit freezes on our website, techguylabs.com. That is a really useful tool in stuff like what happened to Mara. And now it's free. Used to be, man, these companies. Experian, Equifax, TransUnion. Those are the big three consumer credit reporting agencies. Yeah, I guess we need such a thing so we can easily get credit. But they, you know, Equifax doesn't seem to care very much about security. I bet the other two don't either. There was no penalty to pay for leaking all this information. I mean, we talk about, Google and Facebook, but these credit report agencies are collecting vital stuff about you. And if they don't have tip-top security, they should be liable. They should pay huge fines. Thank goodness Congress passed a law that said, okay, well, you can't charge money to freeze credit anymore. They were charging, you know, as much. It depended on the states. Different state laws had different limits on this. But in some states, $45 to freeze it and $45 to unfreeze it. They don't like to freeze it because that's how they make money, selling your information to people. Do you ever get a credit card offer in the mail? Oh, yeah, right? That's because one of these companies sold your data to this credit card company without your permission. They don't have to get your permission or your knowledge. That's their business model. They can't do it if you freeze your credit. They can't do it. You'll stop. You won't get any more credit card offers in the mail. If you want to get a credit card or buy a car or buy a house, you'll have to unfreeze it temporarily. But that's, I think, the way it should be. Do it. Who cares if these guys lose money? They deserve to. They're terrible. Don't get me started. I'm so sorry that happened to Mara, but boy, what good luck that she just had the urge to check her account the day after they did it. Had she waited a couple of weeks, her money would be gone with no recourse. Don, Lake Forest, California is next. Hey, Don, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Don Weisrud here.
Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, I had a quick question. It's a security question. The building where I have my office, it's, you know, I'm not sure if I trust the owners or the security of the room where all of the different companies connect up the wires.
Oh yeah, that closet in the back there where everybody's gets on the internet. Yeah,
the closet. Yes.
Yeah.
And so
we got one of those.
Am I in danger that somebody can tap into my computer? And
well, you know, one of the key cornerstones of security is trust no one. So it's not suspicious or paranoid of you to say, I don't know anything about, you know, that's called, by the way, my studio manager, John, just ran in and said, that's called the MPO. I said, what? The main point of entry. That's where all the wires, all the fiber, all the cable terminates in your office building so it can be distributed. That is a weak link for sure, but I'm hoping they keep that locked. You know, do you have Wi-Fi in your office?
I have Wi-Fi and also wired.
Okay. So the Wi-Fi is broadcast. Yeah. Nobody needs to get access to the MPO. You're broadcasting. So anybody within 150 feet of your office can just get on the network. So it is very important to secure your network. It's businesses especially. Do you have an IT consultant or are you doing it all on your own?
I'm doing it all on my own.
I wouldn't say you're being paranoid, but at the same time, I wouldn't, you know, if you're a lawyer or a doctor and you're dealing with patient records or client records that you have a fiduciary responsibility to keep private, then it's even more important. But everybody in business is, you know, there's always the chance. I mean, this stuff's, all your information is floating around the network. A few ways to handle this. What we do here, and we do have an IT consultant. He's not full-time. I think it's probably a prudent thing to look for somebody, a good IT consultant who can help you with your security. He's our guy, Russell, who's great. You can't have him. He's in Northern California. But he set up a variety of hardware boxes in between us and the outside world that protect us from a lot of threats. I mean, one of the big threats is not the MPO, not the POPO, not the landlord, but phishing scams that come in. Do you have employees?
Yes.
So employees are a weak link, too, because they'll get an email that says, this is Don. I need this report urgently. and open it up. And it's not a spreadsheet. It's not a Word document. It's a malware. And the employee opens it. And now a bad guy's on your network. And right. It can happen to anybody. It happened to Sony Pictures Entertainment very famously. An employee got a phishing email in May. The hackers wandered around the network until they were discovered 6 months later. Meanwhile, they had exfiltrated gigabytes of data from Sony, including movies in progress. It was believed to be a state hacker, North Korea, but bad guys come in all shapes and sizes and nationalities. So I can't give you everything you need to know about protecting yourself. You're right to be thinking about this. The MPO is not probably the biggest security risk. Your employees are. There are lots of things you can do to protect yourself, including employee training. It's important that they understand why people phish them and what phishing emails look like so that they have enough sense to not click the link that came from Don. Urgent. Urgent. You know, the boss writes to you, you're going to end with an urgent email. You're going to click that link unless you really know. Oh, yeah, that's the psychology bad guys use. So I can't recommend somebody in your area. I don't really know who's out there, but I'd look around, maybe ask colleagues, friends, other people in your office park. Who do you use? I think any business that has as data they want to protect, really, it you need somebody to do it for you if you're not a security guru. And I'm not I wouldn't do it for myself. Let's put it that way. We hired Russell, who really knows his stuff. And he came in, he put intrusion detection systems in. I have a little thing on my desk called a canary. I shouldn't tell you. It should be secret. But it's just a little security box that poses as, in my case, as a file server with payroll information on it. And should anybody just even try to open a file on that, oh, man, sirens will go off. I get an email saying there's somebody attacking. I mean, it's little things like that. And a security expert who's good, who's worth his salt or her salt, will know what to do with intrusion detection, filtering out spam and phishing attacks, training employees, locking down your Wi-Fi so that it's encrypted, locking down your network so an intruder can't go into the closet in the back of the building and get in there. All of this stuff. And, of course, there's a lot of people who specialize in it. It's a very lucrative field. And, by the way, you're listening and you're thinking, I want a job in IT. That would be a great field to enter, is IT security. But you got to get the training. You really do, because there's a lot. And it changes constantly. You need constant vigilance. I wish there were one place I could send you to do all this, or one consultant I knew of in Lake Forest that would be great. I don't. So it's going to take a little research. But thanks for asking. You're thinking the right thoughts. Thanks to our musical director, Big Pee-wee. Great job today. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering your phones. Thanks to you, most of all, for joining me. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.